Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk about living the food life in Philadelphia and beyond. This week, we're talking about Tara Matizera's book, Choosing Sides, Dish Drainers, and Holiday Food Traditions. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week. And but actually...
Not the news. I don't want to talk about the news anymore. let's talk about something else that we read.
Yes.
Cookbooks.
We read a lot of cookbooks. The state of the world is too much at the moment. So we're going to talk about Tara's book, Choosing Sides. For those who don't know, Tara Matizera Desmond is a local Philly food writer. She's a friend of both of ours. Joy wrote a book with her called Almost Meatless. And about 3 years ago, Tara published a book called Choosing Sides, which is the best book on side dishes that I know of out there. It's really phenomenal.
An important resource because side dishes, though they are sometimes overlooked or treated as an afterthought, can really be the star of the show. A great side dish definitely outshines the main dish.
Absolutely. And this time of year, I feel like it is the prime time for high quality side dishes. Because yes, we spend a lot of money on turkeys or hams or, you know, rib roasts, but you make up most of the meal with those sides. And so if you are in need of inspiration for side dishes, Tara's book is a great option. So what's cool about it is it's broken up into 8 chapters, each one sort of addressing a different side dish opportunity. So you've got your brunches and lunches, breads, because everyone knows there's no better side than a really good homemade loaf of bread or rolls or something like that.
I remember when Tara was testing recipes for this book, I happened to cross paths with her at her house for some reason when she was doing the, I believe they're chive biscuits.
Those are
incredibly delicious.
Those are really good. The other one I really love from her book is the pumpkin cozy rolls, because how could you just not want to dive into something called a pumpkin cozy roll? Then there's salads and dressings, warm weather cookouts. So those are for the summer, but you could still make them this time of year if you wanted to. Intimate gatherings, and then the last two chapters I find are the most useful for this time of year. They are potlucks and parties, because I feel like often in November and December we're invited to parties where you need to bring something. You need to bring, you know, a good salad or some sort of appetizer, and just having a good resource for those things really help. I know my mom is regularly calls me this time of year saying, I am going to a party, I'm going to a potluck. What should I bring?
I get that call too.
And so I've been meaning to buy a copy of this book for my mom because I know that she'd find it really useful. And then the last chapter is holiday feasts. And so if you are looking to really spice up your holiday entertaining sort of mojo, this is a great option. Some of the other things that I really like in this book, the caramelized onion and roasted garlic herb stuffing. So good. And then there's a salad that I've made many times over the years. That's arugula with sugared cranberries and pancetta, and it is so good.
And even though it is, you know, just perfect for all things holiday, remember when we talked a little bit about the nutrition upgrade program that I participated in? One of the suggestions from the nutritionist that runs that program is to have 2 vegetables, like with your dinner, like eat 2 different kinds of vegetables at dinner. And side dishes is really the way to go there. Yeah. And you can really find yourself short on ideas. So a book like Tara's with so many great options, and many of them vegetable heavy options. I mean, it's like really a 365 days a year resource, even though you might be pulling it out more at the holidays.
Just to give a few more, just 2 more shout outs of recipes that I really like. The brown Brussels sprouts with maple butter. Yum. Hard to go wrong. And she also has a roasted butternut squash and potato dish. It's roasted butternut squash and potatoes.
Oh, that's
so
interesting.
Again, it lightens the potatoes a little bit because the squash isn't quite as heavy. You get the, you know, all those good vitamins from the squash, but the satisfaction of the potatoes. I feel like it's a good one.
And you know what else? I mean, I haven't had that dish, but sometimes butternut squash can get overwhelmingly sweet.
Yeah.
And with the potatoes would also cut down on the sweetness.
Yeah. So it's, again, if you're looking, you know, it was supposed to be our cookbook spotlight, our featured cookbook for this quarter. And with the state of the world, we haven't done as good a job cooking from it recently, but it's one that we love and we highly recommend.
Yeah.
And feel like just because, you know, I feel like cookbooks come into fashion, and then once they're 6 months old, people are moving on to the next. And this is, to me, a classic.
And as you mentioned it, maybe giving it to your mom, I think it would be a good gift.
Yeah.
Kind of a unique perspective on home cooking and holiday cooking that I think enthusiastic home cooks would really like.
Absolutely.
Okay, next up, instead of doing our What's for Dinner segment, I thought we could do What's for Breakfast. Because lately I found myself eating some unusual things for breakfast, and these are dinner foods.
Yeah.
Do you ever do that?
I do. I often, when I have leftover chicken soup, I will often eat it for breakfast. I might poach an egg into it if I want to make it a little bit more breakfasty. But I have been known to just eat leftover chicken soup, or if I have like leftover roasted cauliflower or Brussels sprouts, I'll often just heat those up and eat them for breakfast.
There is something great about soup for breakfast. Yeah. I did that the other day, actually. One of the things that's driving this for me is that you've probably seen there's been a lot of or some new research lately that breakfast is maybe not as important to our health as previously thought.
Yeah, I heard that, which I thought was interesting because we've always heard, you know, it's over so and over again, you know, you've got to eat in the morning because that sets you up for a good day.
Well, some of that research actually, it turns out, was funded by like Kellogg's and breakfast food groups. But I mean, and I think the important thing to remember is no one is saying don't eat when you should not go hungry. You know, if you're hungry in the morning, you want to eat breakfast, you definitely should. But I've been trying to pay attention if I wake up and I don't feel hungry, especially because I work from home and I can just prepare something for myself whenever I do get hungry. But then if I end up not eating something until like 11 o'clock, sometimes it is just straight up dinner, like leftovers from the night before, or something like you just mentioned with the soup that bridges the two meals. Like an egg and a bowl of soup, where I find myself doing this thing lately where I make eggs, but then salad.
Yeah. I've always liked that.
Kind of like a breakfast salad. Mm-hmm. This, I think, should be a bigger thing than it is.
One of my favorites that I eat for both breakfast and lunch on a fairly regular basis is some sort of base of greens, whether it's like baby arugula or perhaps some shredded cabbage and fennel. Mm-hmm. And then I take a couple hard-boiled eggs and I chop them up real fine and add just a spoonful of, you know, store-bought mayonnaise and a little bit of black pepper. And then I stir it all up and it kind of creates its own dressing with the mayonnaise and the yolks from the hard-boiled eggs. And it becomes just creamy and crunchy and protein rich. Right. And
not what you think of when you think of breakfast, but I bet it makes you feel good.
It makes me feel good and it tastes really good and it's really satisfying because you get all of the crunch and the texture. When I eat eggs on their own for breakfast, I sometimes feel like there's not enough chewing involved, which sounds crazy, but I find that I'm more satisfied if there's more sort of active chewing. And so when I want a piece of toast and I don't want to be eating a lot of bread, I'll opt for like, you know, shredded cabbage or something, really finely shredded cabbage. And it gives me the satisfaction of that crunch and that chew without like weighing me down a little bit.
Have you been to Hungry Pigeon for breakfast
yet? I have.
It is very hard for me to not. They have this incredible breakfast sandwich, which is a sourdough English muffin, egg and cheese. But I have branched out a little bit from that. Have you had their breakfast salad?
I have, and I love it.
It is so good.
I also – they have the breakfast salad, and they have like the savory breakfast porridge thing where it's like an egg, but it's savory, like egg and kimchi and some sort of like cooked grains. That one's really good too.
I haven't had that, but the salad is greens, lentils, bacon, a poached egg. It's really, and cheese. It's so filling and delicious. It's like, that to me, if you're going to eat brunch, it should be something like that.
Yeah, I really like that too.
I can't quite copy it at home because it's definitely quite a few components. I could do it, but I don't usually.
I mean, I feel like you could probably fake it. If you left out the bacon, because that's kind of a pain to cook, if you're just doing one or two strips, I find. But if you did like, you had some cold, pre-cooked lentils, you had some sort of like salad green, and then an egg and some cheese.
Yeah.
That's pretty easy.
So basically, I wanted to have this segment to encourage people to eat salad in the morning if they want, and also to give myself permission to eat whatever I want first thing in the day because, you know, your meatloaf tastes good in the morning, your soup is still good in the morning. Like, there's no reason we need to have, like, toast.
Well, and, you know, we're also – other cultures, this is what they do. You know, true. We're the ones who are sort of all about sweet stuff in the morning, whereas if you go to – you know, China or Indonesia or Vietnam, you're going to see a lot of these soups mm-hmm. and savory things in the morning. So really it's, we're just taking that wisdom from other cultures and saying, yeah, go for it.
Let's be more open-minded about morning food. And
okay,
now we're going to tackle a very important and serious topic, dish drainers.
So this came up, Joy and her husband were over at my house for dinner recently, and we started talking about dishes and dish drainers. And
because you have one, right?
I have a super fancy dish drainer.
Even though you also have a dishwasher.
Well, yes. So I'm firmly of the belief that only certain things go in the dishwasher. So really, it's only cups, mugs, glasses, dish, like plates, bowls, and stainless steel silverware. And that's it. That is all I put in my dish drainer or my dishwasher.
Unless explicitly forbidden by the packaging, I will put whatever in the dishwasher.
Well, I find that the dishwasher ruins a lot of stuff. I mean,
what?
Beyond the obvious, you should never put a good quality knife in the dishwasher or wooden utensils because they get all dried out.
I put those in.
Do you really? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Wow. Well, I mean, I have wooden spoons that I've had since college. So I'm pretty like obsessively careful with, I like oil my wooden spoons.
Really?
Oh yeah. At least once a year, I take all my wooden utensils out and I oil them with this combination of beeswax and mineral oil that I keep under my sink. Oh yeah. I'm a little bit wood care obsessive.
I guess my wooden spoons are dried out, but they work. They still work.
Yeah.
What's the purpose of oil? Keeping them oiled?
They just last longer.
Oh, it's not like I'm going through a lot of wooden spoons. I don't know exactly how long I've had them, but definitely 10 years or more.
Well,
huh.
Interesting. Yeah.
Tell us in the comments whether you put your wooden spoons in the dishwasher.
The other thing I don't really put in the, so I don't put any Pyrex, like the vintage Pyrex, because it strips the color.
Oh, and the patterns. I guess I have clear
Pyrex
mostly, but I do have bowls like you have. They definitely go in the,
oh yeah, no. It's really like ceramics that don't have a color or pattern and stainless steel things. And I don't put silverware in the dishwasher.
I don't think I have silverware.
I have a bunch from my grandparents.
I actually have some pretty expensive silverware, but I don't think it's silver.
Stainless steel does fine. But yeah, so I'm pretty exclusive about what I put in the dishwasher. So then I hand wash all my pots and pans.
How often do you use the silverware? Did we use it at your house the other day?
No, that was stainless steel. I mean, I have some, like my soup spoons for some reason. I don't have any stainless steel soup spoons. And so I use the silver soup spoons I got from my grandparents. And so I always hand wash those.
So you're washing more by hand than you're putting in your dishwasher.
I would say it's about 50-50.
Huh.
Yeah. So I have
those. What about your Le Creuset?
Oh, God, never.
Always.
Never.
Why?
Because it rusts where there's that exposed rim on the Le Creuset.
It doesn't rust? Mine's not rusted.
In my dishwasher, it does. Maybe you have a better dishwasher than I do. That could also be the case. I have a cheap dishwasher. But no, I don't put any pots and pans in the dishwasher.
none. Everything. As much as humanly possible, I put stuff in the instant pot liner, everything.
Wow. Yeah, no.
Anyway. Okay, so that's, I guess the thing is, I don't have the dish drain because I really try to just put everything in the dishwasher.
And and it's about 50-50 for me. I hand wash a lot. So I have a really nice dish drainer. I'm totally blanking on the brand now.
I believe that Dan noticed it because it's the Cook's Illustrated top recommended kind. Does that sound familiar to you?
It is. All right. So I'm looking it up. Where did it go? Oh, so
is it Simple Human?
It is. It is the Simple Human. So I, over the years, have gone through a number of dish drainers. I had like the bamboo sort of X one for a while. I had a stainless steel version of that. I had one from IKEA. And the problem with dish drainers is they just don't last very long. They're not made particularly well. And so a few years back, and also I have a sink where it's an overmount sink, so there's a lip there. Mm-hmm. So things don't drain easily. If you have water on the countertop, it's not easy to wipe into the sink. And so I needed a dish drainer that sat high enough that would drain easily into the sink. And looking around, the only ones that I could really find that did that well were the Simple Human dish drainers. Additionally, I have a very narrow sliver of countertop that can hold my dish drainer. And so the nice thing about those Simple Human ones is that they're oriented so that they can be the long way next to the sink, as opposed mm-hmm. – there's some others that are very, very highly rated, but they take up too much real estate. And so they're oriented the wrong way for my kitchen because I don't have that much counter space. But the dish drainer for me is vital. And so I actually like it so much that I have bought it twice. I had one in it after about 5 years of heavy use. It cracked.
Hmm. But it seems like a good lifespan.
Yeah. Here is the trouble. It costs $80. It is an expensive dish drainer.
If I'm remembering this correctly, you like to just let things air dry in your dish
rack.
I do.
I am an air dryer. I don't like to wipe things with a dish towel and put them away immediately. I figure my work is done once they're drip drying. And then, so typically my dish workflow is at the end of the day, once dinner is done, I like to make sure that all the dishes are done. And I load up the dishwasher. If it's full, I run it. If it's not, I don't. And then I wash everything else that's in the sink. I mean, I'm a little compulsive with my dishwashing. I also have one of those, dowel racks for drying zip top bags.
Oh goodness.
So that can reuse
those. Dana's gonna hear this because he edits the show. I don't want that.
So yeah, so I have multiple dish drying.
You mean
things.
Like a zip top bag so that you can rinse it out and reuse it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I reuse my like zip top bags at least four or five times.
I absolutely try to minimize the use of them, but I do not reuse it. Does it? What if you have butter or something in it?
Well, I mean, if it's really greasy, I'll throw it away. But you know, I often use those a lot for storing like prepped salad greens, or like I don't know, leftover pizza, or I don't know. I use them a lot for like vegetables I bought at the farmer's market that I've prepped, and so then they're not really greasy. They just might have some dirt, and so I wash those and dry them and reuse them.
Wow. That's really intense. What happens when you have more dishes than your dish drain holds?
Then I lay – so in my kitchen, there's the sink, and then to the right of the sink is the dish drainer, and then to the right of that is my combination washer-dryer. So I have – I don't have a dryer. I just have this one unit that does both the washing and the drying. And unfortunately, it doesn't do either particularly well. But the surface is metal, and so it's resilient enough that what I'll do is if I have even more dishes, I put a couple of dish towels down on that, and then I load that up, the top of that, with sort of like the big pots and pans and things. And
if I have to wash dishes, that's what I do to that, yeah. Let them sit until I can get to them with a clean towel to dry them and put them away, because I do not like undone chores. I like just do everything beginning, middle, end, done, cross it off the list.
Well, I think that what it must be is that you and I feel like the end of the dishwashing is done at different points, whereas I feel like
– But I mean, it's still out. It's on your counter.
But for me, it's like the putting away is a separate chore that I do in the morning.
Okay.
So the dishwashing gets done at night and the putting away gets done in the morning. Well, if you guys have any comments or things you'd like to add about to our conversation about dishwashing and dish drainers, we'd love to hear you.
I feel like we have talked a lot about washing dishes over the past, like, say, 6 episodes.
Well, you know what? It is a vital part of cooking. You can't cook without having to do dishes.
I hate it so much. So sometimes I imagine I'll hire an intern to do dishes.
I've had those thoughts.
It doesn't seem legal, though.
Interns don't really like to do dishes, though. I had an intern once, and she was more interested in helping with the actual work than doing the dishes.
But. Anyway, okay. Well, let's talk about something more fun.
Yeah. So it's the holiday season, and we just wanted to take a minute to talk about holiday food traditions. And we want to – obviously, this is one that we want you guys to write in, let us know what you think, what your food traditions are, because I love hearing about people's individual family food traditions. But Joy, what are yours?
Well, can we start this conversation by acknowledging that the holidays are really hard for a lot of people, including me?
Yeah.
Okay. Like – since my parents split up, I don't know, 10 years ago now, there's like none of that sense of like going home for the holidays, which is like excruciatingly hard. Even though my family was always dysfunctional, it's better that my parents are divorced. It still makes it not the most wonderful time of the year, so to speak.
Okay.
And to that end, I have sort of tried to do some small things to make my own traditions. Like one thing that I try to do is have like a private Christmas breakfast with just me and Dan. Last year we made sticky buns, which was fun. And in general, we have a no gifts policy, but we have a I guess this won't be secret anymore since I'm saying it in the podcast, but we secretly buy one present for each other.
Uh-huh.
So now we have like Christmas morning alone together in our pajamas. We exchange our one present and we eat like our special breakfast. And that to me, is great.
Yeah.
You know, that's as far as I've gotten so far. I tried to make a cookie baking day with my sister, my mother, and my mother-in-law, but that just it didn't stick. Yeah, that's kind of all I have personally. My mother actually still makes some of the things that she always made when I was growing up, which I'll talk about more later. But you tell me your favorite holiday traditions.
Well, you know, it's funny. So Scott and I have been married for 7 years, but we've never spent Christmas together.
That is wild.
Because I always go home. And so I have the opposite experience where here I am, 37 years old, and I'm still essentially experiencing the Christmas of my childhood. And it's a little...
That's really nice, though.
It is nice. And it's certainly changed over the years. You know, my parents have moved. My sister has two kids. These days for Christmas, we go to my sister's house in Austin, Texas. And it's funny because out of my immediate family, almost everyone is Jewish now. So, so my mom... You know, my sister and I are, you know, we've grown up in sort of this split Jewish Unitarian situation. My brother-in-law is Jewish. They are raising their kids in the same sort of Jewish Unitarian manner. And my dad is Unitarian. So it's funny that Christmas is so important. But my mom grew up in a household. She grew up in a very Jewish neighborhood where they always her family celebrated Christmas. They would sneak a Christmas tree in. They'd put it in the part of the house where no one could see it. They were very secular Jews. So we do have a lot of sort of Christmas tradition.
My best friend from graduate school was Jewish, but she would probably say she was like culturally Jewish.
Yeah.
I don't know how she would never struck me. I don't think she ever went to synagogue as long as I knew her, unless she went home to her family. But anyway, she told me in her family, they celebrated Christmas Eve with like lobster and something else that was very unkosher.
That's awesome.
Anyway.
But so I do have some holiday food traditions. My family for Christmas morning, we always have essentially the same thing. It's fried eggs, turkey bacon, and then some sort of baked good.
So West Coast.
It is so West
turkey
Coast.
Turkey bacon on Christmas.
I know. Well, my mom doesn't eat pork. Right. So, of course, it's turkey bacon. Some years we do – my sister in recent years has discovered pork. She was a vegetarian and has slowly walked that back to the point where bacon is her favorite thing.
Welcome to the club, Marina Rose.
but so – yeah, and so the baked good, in the past, it's been like a store-bought panettone or – 1 year my mom made scones, but over in recent years I've taken over the Christmas morning baked good.
You make sticky buns last year too?
I did.
I remember seeing our Instagrams together.
But you know what's funny is I've come to the conclusion I don't really like a cinnamon roll. Mm-hmm. There's something about it that always ends up tasting plasticky to me.
Huh.
So I think this year I'm going to do some sort of coffee cake, like maybe a yeasted coffee cake.
That sounds good.
Because I think that I'm in charge of making the baked good. I get to choose what I do. So I think that's what I'll do this year. But so that's our Christmas morning tradition. In the couple of weeks leading up to Christmas, I almost always make a loaf of cranberry bread from a children's book that I had when I was growing up called Cranberry Christmas. And I make some like pepita brittle. So like the pumpkin seed, those little green pumpkin seeds.
That's a fun candy.
It is a fun candy. And then, you know, we – Christmas – Eve, we typically have pizza in my family. That's Christmas Eve dinner is typically pizza.
Homemade pizza.
It depends on the year. Some years we make it and some years we buy it. My mom has a rule that you shouldn't have anything for Christmas Eve dinner that is going to produce a lot of leftovers, because then the next day you have Christmas dinner leftovers.
Then you're really behind in leftovers.
Exactly. And so for Christmas dinner, we always have essentially Thanksgiving over again. Turkey, stuffing, gravy, mashed potatoes. And then my sister and mom and I have every year we do a different sort of vegetable. It used to be in years past we did it like a green bean. But these days we make kale salad, which is so West Coast hippie. But it's really –
I don't know. Kale salad has taken over.
I know. But it is not a traditional Christmas item. But it's really good.
One tradition I miss a bit, when Dan's grandmother was alive she did, I mean, up until just a couple of years before she died, the Italian Feast of the Seven Fishes type thing. Although it was more like four or five fishes. But it was a good time. I tried to do that a little bit in part 1 year. Yeah.
I think Scott and my mother-in-law came.
That was like a mashup because not everyone there ate fish. So it was like a half fishes, half something else. I think it was meatballs and sausage.
It sounds fun though.
It was good.
Yeah. So I just, for me, the best part about holiday food traditions is eating together, being with my people. I do want to give a quick shout out though. How to Celebrate Everything. Jenny Rosenstrauch's new book about family traditions and food celebration. If you are looking to create some food traditions in your family around holiday times or other times, that's a great book to start.
Can I tell you something funny about that title? What? I don't have the book in my possession or anything, uh-huh. but when I saw it, I was like, that's a brilliant idea because I misinterpreted the title. I thought the book was about how to celebrate everything, like, oh, wow, we just recorded a podcast.
It is partly that.
Oh, really?
It is. It totally is. It's like celebrating the small things and the big things. I really like it. It's a good book. So,
I'm sorry. I just have to mention one more thing. My mother does listen to this, and I know she's going to be like, oh, poor Joy and her lost holiday traditions. But she's been making this same nut bread for my entire life, and a recipe that her father made, which is strange because her father was the type of man that cooked nothing. I actually wrote a little bit about this last year in a magazine, and it has the recipe, and I will put it on the site. It's just a great quick bread with walnuts. You'll like it. I like it.
I like a good quick bread.
With lots of soft butter. Mm.
Anyway. So, Joy, I hear you bought the most enormous head of celery ever.
Yes.
Or bunch.
Yesterday. When are we in time? We're about a week before Thanksgiving right now. It's a Thursday.
Yes. And this will air first week in December.
My farmer's market is in South Philly. Happens on Wednesday. So this one that I went to yesterday was the second to the last one of the season. Uh-huh. Next week will be the last one. It'll be the day before Thanksgiving. And the farmer that I usually buy from, I got a bunch of things. He was like, oh, if you want a celery for next week, place your order now. They're going to go fast because obviously stuffing, like the celery is a big thing. And I looked at the celery and it was like the biggest, leafiest. This will definitely be the picture that I'll put at the top here. Uh-huh. My sister was with me. She snapped a quick photo. I think that not only am I going to be able to use that for holiday cooking, but also to make that celery salad from Times that I love with all those leaves. So if you happen to spy some of this like bodacious celery at your local farmer's market, I guess this is the season. I didn't really know that. But
You know, what's funny too is that you're not the first person to be talking about giant celery. I saw a picture Megan from Joy of Cooking. Mm-hmm. She posted yesterday on Instagram a picture of her holding up such a large bunch of celery that it totally covered her face.
Yeah, this must be the time.
Yeah.
Of year. I don't know. It might last me through next week. It's so much celery, but you know, we've talked about this before. Sauteed, raw in salad. I like it as just a stick dipped into some tuna salad or like a hummus or whatever. Celery is underappreciated.
Absolutely. Now I'm hungry.
Okay. Well, that does it. Thank you, Dan Call, for editing the show, Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and Raina Rose for providing the music. And thanks to Philly Cam for studio space that we are recording in today. And thanks to you guys for listening. If you like what you hear, please subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. And sign up for our newsletter, listen to our old episodes, and check out the show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.